I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Avital Kazanov, Southwest Director of Masa Israel Journeys, a program that sends 18 to 30-year-olds on incredible Israel experiences. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our Two Jewish maven on Israel, Amir Eden, plus our young Shinshinyot, Ron Benicote, and Rotem Rappaport. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. This has been a very hard week in the American Jewish community. The brutal anti-Semitic attack on the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh's Squirrel Hill neighborhood last Saturday, the vicious murder of 11 Jews who had come to Shul on Shabbos to pray and to celebrate a bris, and the wounding of 6 others, including 4 police officers, shocked and horrified the Jewish world, most of our country, and much of the rest of the planet. This act by a crazed and rabid anti-Semite spewing anti-Jewish hatred struck at the heart of what has always made America great: its capacity to allow everyone the ability to practice his or her own religion in peace, to have true freedom of conscience. Religious bias and bigotry have certainly existed and obviously still exist in the United States, but our government has never passed laws that target religious minorities. Unlike so many other countries in the world, true freedom of religion is enshrined in the First Amendment to our Constitution and protected here. And even with the rise in internet forums that seem to cultivate hate speech, the incidents of violent anti-Semitic acts have been steadily trending downward for decades in America. Until 8 days ago. While there certainly have been U.S. terror attacks that have killed more Jews, hundreds of Jews died in 9/11, of course, this was the single worst anti-Semitic attack in all of American history. A long series of murderous mass attacks on so-called soft targets, schools, churches, nightclubs, concerts, and other public spaces, may have dulled our ability to respond to such horrors. But this was the first such mass murder to successfully, if that's the right word, target a synagogue. The names of the murdered were included in every synagogue Kaddish in America last week. Irving Younger, Cecil and David Rosenthal, Rose Malinger, Melvin Wax, Bernice and Sylvan Simon, Joyce Feinberg, Jerry Rabinowitz, Richard Gottfried, and Daniel Stein. They ranged in age from 54 years old to 97 years old. They were murdered at the beginning of Shabbat services in the synagogue, and the outrageous anti-Semitic brutality of the shooter horrified nearly everyone. Our own thoughts and prayers are with the community in Pittsburgh and with the congregation of Tree of Life that was violated in this awful way. As usual, tragedy and outrage bring us together in America, and there were moving vigils and memorial events across the nation, including a very large one here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, that I participated in. Interfaith and multi-faith support has poured out, and it's reassured Jews everywhere in America that we are not alone. A ministerial friend sent me the famous passage by the heroic German pastor Martin Niemöller. First they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. There has been a tremendous outpouring of support for the Jewish community from Christians, Muslims, members and leaders of all religious groups across the nation and across the world. I just wonder what we will learn from this latest mass murderous attack. You see, according to the U.S. Secret Service, last year in 2017 in America, there were 28 mass attacks, an average of more than two a month, that killed 147 people and wounded over 700. Those numbers may actually be low, since they don't include the hundreds of people injured fleeing during the panic at the Las Vegas Harvest Festival massacre 13 months ago. Remember that? The totals for this year, 2018? We don't know yet. There are still two more months to go. We've become conditioned to the nearly routine insanity of violent attacks on churches, schools, nightclubs, theaters on a nearly weekly basis. In a way, the likelihood of such a terrible incident targeting a synagogue had become pretty high. It is awful to say this, but if churches, clubs, theaters, and schools are being attacked and pipe bombs put in the mail, temples are going to be next. Niemöller's quote works both ways. This recurrent American public violence is neither normal nor acceptable for a civilized society. We must decide that enough is enough. This time we must act to prevent a recurrence. It can be stopped. We must insist that it is. We have to do a better job identifying potential shooters. We must do a better job protecting our own places of prayer and study. We must do a better job treating mental illness. And we must stop the flood of hostility that is washing over our country. We have become conditioned to accept that hate speech, including anti-Semitism, is simply part of our American right to free expression in 2018, especially in social media and online forums. When the insanity of Charlottesville took place last summer in 2017, most of us proclaimed that such a public display of hate speech, anti-Semitism, and racism had no place in our country. And yet, we have continued to tolerate the open disparagement of prominent Jews by fringe organizations, and allowed ugly insinuations about influential Jews to cross the line into slander, hatred, and virulent anti-Semitism. This is also not acceptable for a civilized society and for its officials or those running for office. We must decide enough is enough. Act against it, and against those who practice hate speech. None of us is truly safe so long as public hate speech is the order of the day in America and decency is on the retreat. We cannot do more to help directly than simply offer condolences and prayers for the victims in Pittsburgh. But we can do a great deal more to heal our society by insisting that hate speech of any kind must be eradicated. We can insist on honesty, decency, and respect in our public discourse and from our media, including the radio. It is up to us to choose to simply stop condoning hateful speech, to vote only for those who do not practice it, to insist that social media, websites, and all the other interactive platforms in our lives refuse to tolerate it. Only when we make that commitment and stop pandering to our worst impulses do we have the right to hope that things will improve in our society for everyone. To play us in this morning on the theme of respect for neighbors is a song written by my dad, Rabbi Enkanter Baruch Kohan, long ago that still has great resonance. You will love him as yourself, from the Torah, Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha.
You should love your neighbor as yourself. You will love him. You will love your neighbor. You will love him. You will love your neighbor. And if you love him, if you love your neighbor, love him as yourself. Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Reacha kamocha. You will. neighbor, and if you love him, if you love your neighbor, love him as yourself.
That was You Will Love Him by Baruch Kohan. We can dream, but we must start to act. Our guest this morning is the very charming Avital Kazanov, Southwest Director of Masa Israel Journeys, a complex of programs that provide incredible opportunities for young adults to work and study in Israel. Meet her and find out about Masa when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Jewish this morning our guest, Avital Kazanov, who is the Southwest Regional Director for Masa Israel Journey. Good morning and welcome.
Hi, everyone.
So what is Masa? It's incredibly interesting organization that does a lot of good work, but a lot of people don't know what it is.
Okay, so Masa is a leader in immersive international experience in Israel for young adults from 18 to 30 years old. Our diverse portfolio of study abroad programs, internship, service learning, Jewish studies offer a variety of options.
So if somebody just graduated from college, that's part of your audience, 22, 23 years old, and they're trying to figure out what they want to do next, what kind of programs are available to them?
We can offer them from study abroad opportunities to learning, volunteering, or go and teach English in Israel.
So I understand there's a shortage of English teachers in Israel now.
Yes, Israel right now really lacking in English speakers, and the government of Israel came to us 3.5 years ago and said, can you help us out and create something special and bring English native speakers to Israel to help to educate Israeli kids?
There's a stipend, actually, I understand, if you can teach English. Now, you don't have to be a teacher. It helps if you have a teaching certificate. But if you just have a bachelor's degree, you can go and...
You can go and just spend a year there. Everything is fully covered. You get in a stipend for food, and it covers more than just food. You also have an opportunity after a year to extend for another year, and we are giving you a work visa.
Wow. And so if you do that, you also get the opportunity, of course, to learn Hebrew better. I'm sure there's some extensive Ulpan program that kids can get into.
Yes, we have that too. So the whole program is in English. You have opportunity to, that's part of the program, to go to Ulpan. You also travel all over Israel. We organize programs to explore and learn about the history of Israel, about different places. You live with young professionals from all over the world who are doing the same thing, exploring the country and helping government of Israel and Israelis to live and learn English. So,
and I should say this is just one of many programs that Masa has. We will talk much more when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish with Avital Kazanov about Masa, and you'll hear about just an incredible array of opportunities, including some great internships in Israel. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue based in northwest Tucson, is celebrating its first services, classes, and events this fall. Established by a group of passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is dedicated to creating a vibrant community that will strive each day to serve God with joy. As a new progressive congregation in the northwest region of Tucson, Beit Simcha is open to all throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming in northwest Tucson. The first weekly Shabbat services in the northwest will be at the Oro Valley Community Center this Friday night, November 9th, for Shabbat services at 6 p.m. There'll be religious school and adult education academy courses at the Educational Center on Oracle Road, north of Ina. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha and to attend services and the Adult Education Academy courses, go to www.beitbeitsimchatucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Or go to beitsimchatucson.org. Join me in the newest Jewish community in southern Arizona at its exciting beginning. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Cohen Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Cohen and Irma Cohen, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Cohen Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Cohen Foundation Award, please go to CohenAward.com, C-O-H-O-N, award.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is CohenAward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular podcast, Top 10 Jewish Podcast in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our maven on Israel, Amir Eden, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So, Amir, you've just came back from Israel and encountered the horrible events at the synagogue, at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. We American Jews, this is the worst anti-Semitic attack in American Jewish history, 11 people killed. But for Israelis, that's obviously not a new experience. Can you give us your perspective on it?
Look, Rabbi, unfortunately, I've been witnessing anti-Semitism many years ago while I was here in the States. I was a summer camper in Connecticut, and that was my first experience in the United States. In Israel, I can tell you that there were times, such as the Second Intifada, where people used to say that it's funny or sad, but kind of like the worst place for Jews to live safety-wise was Israel. They said that that it's an irony that you live in the Jewish state and then you have such so many terrible attacks. And then obviously after we experienced here September 11 and other incidents. We know that hate is all over the world and not just in Israel. In Israel, we unfortunately had to deal with terrorists attacking a synagogue, either inside or outside. And it's a terrible thing. We have zero respect to people who come in and kill people who are praying for God.
The experience here and the response, in particular, the tremendous amount of support from the Christian, the Muslim, the religious community across the board is really extraordinary. Have you seen that before?
Yes, I've seen it before. I've seen before how all religions come together and, good people who want the light to shine and to overcome hate. I've seen it before.
The experience that Israel has had in hardening soft targets, which is, I hate to even use these terms, we're talking about, a shul or a church, whatever. Do you think that's valuable now? Is that one direction we might begin to think?
Unfortunately, I think so. Again, we lived for years and years in different reality. Our enemies in Israel are outside of the country and inside the country. Our Secret Service is doing a wonderful job to monitor as much as it can. And I know that, you know, we listen and watch, you know, activities in various places. I don't want the United States to go to that direction, but unfortunately, enemies are everywhere.
Well, I hope we have happier topics next week. Thanks, Amir. We'll talk then.
Thank you, Rabbi.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You recently returned from a trip to Eastern Europe. We talked last week about Latvia and kind of the remains of Jewish memory there. I'm not sure there's much of a living community there now, though, of course, once it was a great community. You also went to Lithuania, which had a tremendous Jewish history. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Right. So the capital of Lithuania is somewhat confusingly Vilnius in Lithuanian, Vilna in Russian, and Wilno in Polish,
right,
which is pronounced Vilna anyway.
Yeah.
But it looks like three completely different words.
Yeah, and it's all the same place. And of
right.
course, Vilna, hugely important in Jewish history, the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Shas, edition of the Talmud. I mean, even
right.
the word brings up
it
some
was
power.
Sort of the Jerusalem of Ashkenazic Jewry in
like the
Europe.
19th century.
The way that Thessaloniki was the Jerusalem of Sephardic Jewry. And it plays on that. It attracts a lot of Jewish tourists. It has a great museum of tolerance. The old Jewish ghetto is actually divided into two parts, which are somewhat removed from each other, but they're pretty well marked. There's, of course, a monument to the Vilna Gaon, and we had a guide who, very interestingly, was not Jewish, has a daughter who's graduating from the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor, but has 11 family members who were recognized by Yad Vashem as righteous among the Gentiles for their role in saving Jewish lives during the Holocaust. So this woman is deeply invested in local Jewish history. She makes her living that way. She's learned a lot of Hebrew. At appropriate moments and places, she said to our group, "Does anybody wish to say Kaddish?" I mean, she was quite
knowledgeable,
a monument to cultural sensitivity. And we visited what for me was quite meaningful. I led a group of teenage American Jews in 1974 to a number of places, including Vilnius. And at that point, the one synagogue that was still active, even under the harshest of Soviet conditions, under Brezhnev, whatever, was a wreck physically. It was falling apart. The walls were literally crumbling. The only people there were males over 80 or 85. And there were some books, which they begged us to take away because they said, otherwise they'll just get eaten by the rats. So some kids took books as souvenirs. Well, now that same synagogue has been renovated beautifully, and life has been breathed back into this community by Chabad. And we visited the synagogue and saw this 14-year-old kid dressed like a Chabadnik from Boston who was trying to get everybody to bench lulav and etrog. And one of my friends from here, who's over 80, had never done it in her life.
Oh my
but
goodness.
She responded to this Chabad kid by saying, "Sure, I'll do it."
Oh.
And she, you know, said the words and went through the motions and whatever. And then I asked him a question that he thought was just to annoy him, but it was a genuine question, which is, why do we use the same verb for netilat lulav and netilat yadayim?
For washing hands and raising up and
shaking
the lulav.
Right. So he said, "That's a good question. I'll have to ask my father. Come back tomorrow and I'll tell you." But it was, it's also a very beautiful city.
By the way, I know the answer if you want. I can tell you.
I've learned subsequently, I correspond with a lot of rabbis. So anyway, it was a great stop, great food, beautiful city. And there is a little bit of Jewish life there, but not as much as in the next stop, which I guess we'll get to next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk then.
And look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. David is telling a new joke to Yossi. Yitzchak and Haimi were talking one day. Right away, Yossi interrupts him. "Always with the Jewish jokes," he says. "Give it a rest. Why are your jokes always about Jews? Just change the names to some other ethnic group for once, will you?" "Okay," says David. "So Hashimoto and Suzuki were talking one day at their nephew's bar mitzvah." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish Just for You. You should live and be well. We welcome our Shin Shiniyot, our young representatives on Israel, Rotem Rappaport and Ron Benekot, who are here representing the Weintraub Israel Center and Israel. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
You know, Israel has an incredible music scene, a lot of great music, and I don't just mean the one song that's now, that won Eurovision this year. You know, it's had a great pop music scene for a long time. Do you miss it, being here in America? I mean, there's so much music here, but it isn't Israeli, mostly.
I really miss it. For me, it's really important to hear Israeli music. That's why I grew. That's what I grew up on, and that's what I listen to every day. I have a playlist in my phone, and I listen in my car to a lot of Israeli music. I try to listen only to Israeli music. I have this radio station, Israeli radio station called Galgalatz on my phone, which I also try to listen.
I remember the ads for it when I was driving around Israel the last time.
Yes. Yes, that's a very popular station in Israel. So I try to listen to it and even hear the news and the weather and also a lot of Israeli music.
How about you?
I really love music. I feel like music can connect between people. So wherever I go here, I try to play other people my favorite kind of music and make them listen to different kinds of Israeli music. Maybe they could know a little bit better about our different genres and different kinds of Israeli music and love it. I really hope so.
What's your favorite types, genres of Israeli music that you guys like? You want to go first, Ron?
Sure.
Since you're on the mic.
I feel like there is one kind that is really different than everything that I listen to here. We have something called Mizrachit.
Yeah.
Which is really like party songs, or you can hear it
in
weddings.
Mizrachit, of course, means, you know, basically Jews from east of Israel.
Yes.
You know, Iraqi, Iranian, whatever, Yemenite, all kinds of, and it all somehow also includes Jews from North Africa. I don't exactly understand why, but it does. But it's any kind of that, but it's not, it's some of it's even religious music that has that same beat.
Right.
It's got this incredible vitality to it.
It's I think that the voices of the singers are a little bit different and the melodies.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. We call it Sil Sulim.
How about you, Rotem? What's your favorite kind of Israeli music?
I like old genres. I really listen to everything. I really like.
So what's an old genre? Because I'm older than you. So tell me, like, which people would be in the genres that you listen to and the types of Israeli music?
I really like old Israeli music. You know, like not old, but you know, calm songs like Arik Einstein.
Mm-hmm. Arik Einstein.
Shlomo Arzi.
Yeah, yeah.
See, stuff like that. I like to listen to it.
I agree with you. That's old and it's wonderful too. I listen to that. So people can really find all of this stuff on YouTube, I know, and they can find it online. Best way to do it, do you think?
Just write Israeli music. It probably pop up some artists and songs that are a must.
I would even look for Galgalatz station.
Oh, they have a website with their music,
yes,
and they stream.
Or right. Eco 99 FM.
Cool.
These are, it's Eco, like ECO.
ECO, okay.
99
Echo.
FM. Echo.
Echo, ecologically.
And online you can find it. It's really cool.
Thanks so much, guys. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now a word of Torah. This week's portion of Toldot includes the treachery of Jacob and the foolishness of Esau, the famous story of brotherly rivalry that sets in motion this central tale in Genesis. It is a story of twins who are anything but fraternal in their interactions. Jacob is a lover of tents, a homebody whose mother loves him. Esau is a hunter and outdoorsman, a man active in the extreme and more or less devoid of thought. In our weekly portion, Jacob fools his family twice. First, he cons the hungry Esau into selling his birthright, his inheritance, for a bowl of lentil porridge. Then, at the instigation of his mother Rebekah, Jacob fools his father Isaac into giving him the principal blessing, the spiritual heritage of the leadership of the people someday known as Israel. Why is it that Jacob is the one who will become the true father of our people? He is clever and verbal, cerebral, but he clearly lacks basic moral qualities we should find critical. Esau, too, is no bargain. All physical exertion and emotional outburst, instinctive but unreflective, all id to Jacob's superego. In fact, it's through both of them that the great story of God's oneness will be carried forward. Through both of them, for all their flaws. God finds a way to work for the future and for destiny, in spite of the humanness of the protagonists. That message is complex but useful. The truth is that we are all, both Jacob and Esau, partly thoughtful, partly instinctive. We, each of us, are also twins in this sense. We can act with deliberation and care, or forcefully and without judgment. We all have the capacity to be either ethical or unethical. In that dichotomy lies our innate humanity. And in the persons of Esau and Jacob, we can see ourselves and learn that it's only through God's providence that we will truly find our own promised land. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Avital Kazanoff, the Southwest Regional Director of Masa Israel Journeys, will tell us about some exceptional opportunities for young Jewish adults in Israel that go far beyond anything Birthright Israel can provide. Find out about them when we return in a moment here on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The horrible anti-Semitic massacre at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh brought out responses that make you proud to be a human being, even after such an atrocity. In one such instance, a refugee from Iran raised over $600,000 for the Pittsburgh Synagogue when the gunman killed 11 people on Saturday. He did so in one day. Shai Hatiri, 29 years old, started an online fundraiser to collect donations for the Tree of Life congregation on Sunday morning. A week ago now, just the day after the attack. By Monday afternoon, he had raised over $640,000, far exceeding expectations. I thought to myself, worst comes to worst, it'll raise like $500, which is better than nothing. It's a little above that now, he said. Hatiri is a political refugee. You remember when America welcomed refugees from persecution, don't you? Anyway, Hatiri is a political refugee from Iran and a graduate student at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies in Baltimore. He personally identifies as a deist, not that that matters. Hatiri was inspired to raise money when seeing a Jewish friend's reaction to the shooting. She told me what happened and she was just broken, he said. Seeing how upset she was, I wanted to donate to the congregation. Hatiri said that seeing the donations come in has inspired him. Everyone talks about how divided we are, he said, but in such a tragic moment, Americans are always powerful and indivisible in trauma. In Israel, on the other hand, the Ashkenazic chief rabbi, David Lau, refused to call Tree of Life a synagogue because it is a conservative temple. Instead, he called it a place with a profound Jewish flavor. Lau proved again that the Orthodox chief rabbinate, the Rabbanut, is a terrible representative of Judaism. To his credit, Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu would have none of it, responding that Jews were killed in a synagogue. They were killed because they are Jews. The location was chosen because it is a synagogue. We must never forget that. We are one, Netanyahu said. Maybe just not one with the chief rabbinate. In Ukraine, secret recording devices and other surveillance activities were discovered at one of Kiev's main synagogues, according to a chief rabbi of Ukraine who said this discredits the state. Moshe Azman, one of two chief Orthodox rabbis in Ukraine, announced the discovery this month. The synagogue security task force found individuals who professionally carried out a covert surveillance of the premises and visitors of the Kiev Central Synagogue on 13 Shota Rustaveli Street, Osman said. The bugs were found in sweeps inside the House of God, as Osman called the synagogue, in protest of the alleged surveillance activity. I am obliged to emphasize my deep concern about actions that not only compromise our community and our manifestations of anti-Semitism, but also discredit the nation Ukraine as a whole. Osman said his security crew informed not only Ukrainian authorities about the discovery, but also Israeli officials. He said he suspected high-level law enforcement officials in Ukraine of mounting the surveillance operation. Osman demanded an explanation from the government and legal action against the initiators of the surveillance operation. The government's National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine has denied the accusations. Who knew Ukraine had an anti-corruption bureau? Under communism, Jewish communities and individuals came under constant surveillance in the former Soviet Union, to which, of course, Ukraine used to belong. In his statement, Osman also said that his and other Jewish communities have spoken out against Russian propaganda that uses anti-Semitism to discredit Ukraine. In other news, in Denmark, the Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, provided Copenhagen with information that thwarted an Iranian plot to assassinate an Iranian separatist leader in that Scandinavian country. A Norwegian citizen of Iranian background was arrested in Sweden October 21st and extradited to Denmark. Information from the Mossad led to the arrest of the suspect in the plot. The Mossad was also responsible for providing information to French authorities back in June about a plan to attack a meeting of Iranian opposition figures there. Denmark recalled its ambassador from Iran last week and accused Tehran of planning to assassinate the man believed to be a member of an Arab separatist movement within Iran. Iran, of course, denied involvement. I have decided to recall Denmark's ambassador to Tehran for consultations, Danish Foreign Minister Anders Samuelsen said. Denmark can in no way accept that people with ties to Iran's intelligence service plot attacks against people in Denmark. The suspect was seen photographing the home of the target. The target was a senior member of the Arab Struggle Movement for the Liberation of Ahvaz, an organization that wants a separate state for Arabs in western Iran. After a shooting at an Iranian military parade back in September that killed 25, both Islamic State and another Arab separatist group took responsibility. Iran accused Denmark, Britain, and the Netherlands of harboring leaders of separatist groups. Possible. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo last week thanked Denmark's government for arresting the Iranian regime assassin. The search for the assassin, who was thought to be in Denmark on September 28th, led to a major security operation between Denmark and Sweden. This unprecedented action took place. Police hunted a Swedish citizen, apparently seen near the home of the dissident. Denmark closed the bridge that links Denmark to Sweden and the bridge linking the Danish island of Zealand with the mainland, cutting off Copenhagen and the island around it. Wow. Denmark closed its borders, used dogs and helicopters, and got the guy. Not in Denmark, but in Sweden, October 21st. The suspect, of course, has denied the charges. We are dealing with an Iranian intelligence agency planning an attack on Danish soil, said the head of the Danish Security Service. Samuelsen condemned the incident as completely unacceptable. Danish Prime Minister Lars Løkke Rasmussen said that Copenhagen would work closely with Britain and other countries to stand up to Iran. This plot is another in a series of Iranian-backed attacks and incidents all over Europe, and apparently the Mossad has been helpful in thwarting many of them. October 26th, France expelled an Iranian diplomat over another plot. In connection to the same case, Germany has backed the extradition of an Iranian diplomat based in Austria and detained in Germany. Naturally, Iran denies everything. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back our guest this morning, Avital Kazanov, the Southwest Regional Director of Masa Israel Journeys. Avital, you told us about one program and a little bit of an overview of Masa. What ages are served by Masa programs in general?
In general, it's from 18 to 30 years old. We have few programs that expand to the teaching. Masa Israel teaching fellow is up to 35. And then we just opened a brand new program is Masa Tech. That one going to be till 39.
Wow. So that's for whom? What qualifies as Masa Tech?
It's for programmers and engineers to go and work in tech field. Israel has a lack of engineers and programmers.
It seems incredible that the startup nation doesn't have enough programmers, but there's never enough programmers in the world today, it seems like.
Yes, it is.
And so that program is it just announced, right?
It just announced. It will be launched in January, and anybody can go anytime.
So there is no specific date. You have to go in July or August. You go anytime you want to go.
Yes,
and
we arrange everything for you. We arrange everything from you from internship to apartment. Everything will be taken care of.
So internships are another important part of what Masa Israel Journey does. There's some incredible internships that you offer. Can you explain about those a little?
Yes. So we have internship in any possible field, from non-profit world to working in the government. You choose what you're interested in, and we set up an interview with our program providers on the ground who are facilitating you during the process when you're in Israel. I'm the first point here in the States, and when you're going in Israel, then we have our program providers who are taking care of you there. They are arranging the interviews with different companies, and they doing first interview with you. And after that, they arranging, after they learning what you're interested in about your personality, they arranging the internships for you. You're having an interview with the internship company, and you are set to go.
So the internships include some really incredible ones, lots of important companies, but also I understand there's one that has to do with the Knesset?
Yes, we have an opportunity for you to work in the Knesset, to have an internship in the Knesset. We have it's a special program called the Government Israel Fellow, and they specialize specifically for you to work in the Knesset. So it's an intense program for a year. You learn Hebrew, it's an intense ulpan there, and you get an opportunity to work in the Knesset with the government of Israel.
Wow. Which undoubtedly leads to other opportunities down the road, you would think. About how many people are involved with Masa Israel Journey, and are they all on the same program, on a variety of different programs? How does it play out?
There is a variety of different programs. Depends what you are looking for to do. You name it, we have it. We have opportunity for you to intern in different fields, different people going on different programs. We set them up, depends on the program provider and on the area where you looking to be at. We will be setting you up in the apartments where you're living with young professionals from all over the world who are interning in the same area. So we are setting them up by the areas. And you just enjoy Israel, and there is a lot of people going from states from all over the world. It's a world organization, so we have over 92 representatives all over the world.
Wow. So you'll meet people if you go on such a program, or if your son or granddaughter or whomever goes on the program, they'll meet Jewish people from all over the world, right?
Yes. You living with students from all over the world, you make friends, you travel all together to your trips during the year. It's every couple of weeks you get in a trip to travel.
So it's like a teul, right? You go on a...
Yes. Teul during your internship.
Okay. So if someone has done, for example, as so many young American Jews have done Birthright, and they come back and they had a great experience in Israel and they think they want to go back, but they don't know exactly how to do it, what's the best way for them to get started?
The best way for them to get started is
Or I should say, what's the best way for their parents to tell them to get started?
Okay, so for their parents is going to be just to get in touch with me. We even have, for example, somebody's right now taking a semester in Israel, right? That's an option. You know, for example, you're studying here in college and you're thinking okay, until the college is over, there is no possibility I'll go to Israel. I only have a summertime. We have opportunity for you to go in a summertime to do a short internship for 8 weeks. That's another option. And if you are considering of taking a semester abroad, then we have options for you to take a semester abroad in your field, in one of the top universities like Tel Aviv University, Ben Gurion University, IDC in Herzliya. There is top universities that are willing to work with you and have for you created an amazing experience for you in Israel.
And the instruction in those programs is in English?
Yes. Everything, all programs we have are in English. So you get in a semester abroad in Israel. It's all in English. You're learning. You have an ulpan classes, so you learn in Hebrew. But at the same time, you don't need to know Hebrew fluently, which is amazing. And at the same time, during this semester, we right now we cannot guarantee you what classes will 100% be accredited. So how it works, you are connecting to your study abroad office.
Right. And on your then own campus are, in the United
yes,
States.
In
right.
In your campus. And then university, what you choose, we are connecting both of you with the university. And then we are checking with study abroad to make sure which classes.
So if you're interested in doing a semester abroad, actually, Masa is a really great resource for figuring out how to do that in Israel.
For sure, yes. And not only that, what we do, we're giving you a grant. So we're helping you to subsidize the program, not only arrange everything for you, but also
help fund it. That's
yes.
Fantastic. I understand there's a program in which you can get a combined, is it a law degree, business degree, undergraduate, graduate program? Can you explain about it's a very sophisticated program, but it sounds incredible. Can you
yes,
tell us about that a little bit?
Yes, we just got approved on this amazing program. It's a opportunity to get a BA in law, in international law, in 4 years. So you don't need to take any prerequisite and go to college for regular classes. You can finish school and directly go for 4 years to this program. 3 of the years are in Israel. 1 of the year is in the state. It's all in English. You're getting your bachelor degree in international law, and after that you can just take a bar exam. Plus, if you want to get 2 degrees, 2 BA degrees, and spend another year, with extra year, you can get another business entrepreneurship and innovation degree.
So you could end up with a business entrepreneurship degree and an international law degree that might possibly make you employable.
For sure, 100%. Plus, of course, the price of the education in Israel is much cheaper. And you will save a lot of money and extra 3 years.
So instead of graduating with a bunch of debt and maybe prospects of employment, you end up with employment and not much debt. It's kind of an incredible
yes.
possibility.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
you get to spend a lot of time in Israel. What's the most unusual program do you think that Masa offers? Because there's so many different kinds of programs.
I feel that unusual will be to teach English, not, you know, like it's one of the unique programs because you are in totally different environment compared to a regular program. Plus the new one, the Masa Tech, that will be an incredible opportunity for somebody to go to Israel and get an internship, paid internship in one of the top companies in Israel. For sure. After that, I don't think that anybody will ever have a problem of getting a job here in the States.
In either country, I would think.
Another thing what I want to add, during the program, what Masa offers, not everybody knows, we have a leadership academy. That's a totally free thing. On top of everything you do, we offer you, we have a limited amount of spots, of course. It's 300 people a year, so 150 people first semester and 150 people second semester. We offer a leadership experience. Some people sometimes don't understand and they think, oh, leadership, you know, I'm not planning to be a leader and, you know, manage a group. It's not about managing a group. It's about learning life skills. We organize seminars. Our students are meeting, it's a commitment, of course. Every few weeks, they're meeting with our leadership academy. We bring different speakers. We have different tracks. We have 2 tracks. One is Jewish Federation track, and one is the Hillel track. So if somebody interested to get a job in nonprofit world, we are opening a door for you. After finishing Masa program and this leadership academy, there is no problem to get a job. We have direct connections with organizations and you will be employed right away.
Wow. And that's just by interview. People that are already in the program have the opportunity to do this and get promoted
yes.
into a really great track. What's the best contact for people? Do they go to the website? Do they email you? What do you want?
The best contact will be just to email me or call me, text me, and we will set up a call. I will send you an email with the link where it's very easy. Calendly, you go click on the link, choose a time, and we are setting up a phone call. I am finding out what you're looking for, and I'm sending you all the information, the right programs. You will get connected with the program providers to learn more in details about each program. You choose the program, and they will start the program, the process with you, with interviewing you. If you are the right person for the program, they will let us know that you are approved on their side. Then you are coming back to me and filling out our forms on our side with your financial situation, and we are approving you with the grant.
It's almost like a what we call a shidduch, right? You're setting up. It's like matchmaking, right?
100% agree. It's a real matchmaking. I'm finding out what is your partner interested in and what you interested in, and we are making a shidduch.
It's very Jewish work that you're doing. So it's the website is Masa Israel Journeys. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
So masaisraeljourneys.org. I must be close. And of course, if you search Masa Israel Journey, you will find out lots of information about how many people go on a Masa program in any given year.
We have around over 1,000 people going.
About 1,000 people going from the United States,
yep.
and then more from all over the world.
Yes.
So, really incredible program. Sorry, people haven't heard about it till now, but hopefully they've heard about it now. Is there anything you want to add about Masa Israel Journey that people should know?
I feel that if you love Israel and want spend some time, no matter if you know what you want to do in life or not, this is an incredible life-changing opportunity that you can take until you're still not employed or in a process and transition of figuring out what you want to do in life. Or if you're in college or just graduated school, you know that Harvard a couple of years back did a research saying that kids who take in a gap year are much more successful and making much more money than anybody else because they're not getting pressured. It's not your parents' decision of what you want to do. You go to Israel, you explore, you can take classes, you can volunteer and do an internship in 18 years old, not having an experience, and you're figuring out yourself what's important for you. And what could be better than you learning something new, exploring the country, and of course it's Israel, not any other country, and just having a journey.
Sounds like a great plan. Avital, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Two Jewish will be Angela Himsel, author of a fascinating book, A River Could Be a Tree, a memoir. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TwoJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning is from Israel. Our past guest, Idan Reichel and Barry Sakharov, Lama Zema Gialanu. Why do we deserve this? My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a better week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
למה זה מגיע לנו? ואיך זה שלא ראינו את זה בא? ובשדה רחב פרסנו ידיים ורוח סתם הגיעה ובעורפנו נשבה עכשיו הכל קפה למה זה מגיע?
שחלמנו ועפנו לשמיים, התעוררנו שבורים באדמה.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.